Now, I'm delighted to be joined once again by Mike Davis, chairman of the Raleigh Town Museum. So, hi, Mike, and a very happy new year to you.
Hello, Scott. Yes, happy new year.
And I think you've got some special news, have you not? Come on, it's hot off the press.
Okay, you've talked me into it, Scott. Shortly before Christmas, I received a letter from the Cabinet Office to tell me that I was being awarded a British Empire Medal in the King's 2025 New Year's Honours List.
Fantastic.
This particular award is given to someone in the voluntary sector for exceptional hands-on service to the local community. Although a personal honour, I must say it would not have been possible without the active support and commitment of the whole Museum Manager Group, trustees, volunteers, benefactors, members of our friends group, indeed the whole Raleigh community, because it reflects greatly on everybody.
And how long has the museum been going there?
The museum, thanks for mentioning that, Scott. I always like a plug for the museum, as you know. The museum commemorates our 9th anniversary in April of this year. So it's time flies, doesn't it? Goodness gracious me.
So you've got two bonuses now. Now, when you were here last time, we were looking at some of the issues relating to crime and punishment in past times. Clearly, you're not going to be falling foul of that. And although we looked at a number of issues, including some of the less gruesome sentences, such as the stocks and flogging, we also touched on some of the rather less pleasant aspects, such as the stake. So what have you got for our delight today, and not obviously a nice juicy steak?
Well, yes, on the menu today, well, obviously, just as now, imprisonment was always an option.
So what might you have done to face being thrown into prison?
Good question. Well, that, talking about the steak, that's really a bit of a movable feast, depending upon who was in charge. But as an example, when the Puritans had the upper hand in the mid-1600s, swearing, drinking and having sex outside of marriage, playing sport or games and drinking on a Sunday are some examples.
And I believe they also didn't like May Day too much.
Indeed.
So having fun and living a little would be you'd be falling foul.
Absolutely. I mean, prior to 1770... prisons were generally holding stations before a trial. In London, for example, there were 14 alone and were designated by different crime types. With no strict rules as to how they should be run, towns and counties could do basically what they wanted. So around a quarter of prisoners actually died of diseases like typhus. Wealthier prisoners could pay the jailer, many of whom were corrupt, for beds, blankets and better food. It had been possible to keep the prison population artificially low by means of transportation.
Well, perhaps we could look at transportation in a moment, but as you've already alluded to, prison life could be very unpleasant. So how did that change?
Well, generally, criminals were considered to be hopeless cases and best dealt with by either execution or transportation. But from the late 18th century, people like John Howard, Elizabeth Fry and Samuel Romilly, outraged by the unsanitary and overcrowded conditions, pushed for reforms, such as introducing payment for prison jailers, better segregation of inmates, with men, women, murderers, smugglers, thieves and children all thrown in together. Eventually, children were moved out to newly introduced borstals. Some other crimes were reclassified. During the period of the Bloody Code, which, as we've mentioned last time, many judges favoured transportation as an alternative to imprisonment or indeed the death penalty. The Bloody Code was the name given to the English legal system by the late 1700s, when over 220 different crimes could attract the death penalty, including cutting down a tree, stealing from a rabbit warren, or being out at night with a blackened face.
Goodness me, that could be a problem. Okay, so looking at transportation, just what did this entail, and who would most likely be transported?
Okay, well, from 1654, some convicts were transported to the colonies rather than face execution. Sentences were generally for periods of 7 or 14 years, or even life. Transportation to America ended in 1776, but started to Australia in the year 1787 and was often used against people convicted of theft. Most were repeat offenders. Others facing transportation were protesters, such as Luddites, the Rebecca rioters, who in fact were tenant farmers in Wales, protesting against the toll fees applied to road users, and of course the well-known Tolpudder Martyrs.
Now, the last time you were here, we covered burnings at the stake, but we haven't even touched on the really big crimes, such as treason.
Well, treason indeed, yes. Well, first of the offence of high treason included counterfeiting money, or coining as it was called. Coining was the clipping of coins for pieces of silver and gold which were melted down to produce counterfeit coins. Possession of coining equipment and colouring base metal coins to pass them off as of higher value. Commoners convicted of treason were hung, drawn and quartered, and because it was considered to be a deterrent, until 1868, this punishment was held in public, drawing large crowds. But women were spared this punishment since it would have involved nudity. The method employed would have involved being hung and then cut down whilst still alive, after which felons could be disemboweled before being beheaded and their body would be chopped into four parts, hence the name quartered. The traitor's lands and money would be confiscated by the monarch. Guy Fawkes was sentenced to be executed in this way, but avoided it by breaking his neck by throwing himself from the platform in January 1606. Royalty, however, were beheaded, usually with an axe. Mary, Queen of Scots, was executed in this way in 1587. By the way, there's a pub in Great Tower Street in London that goes by the name Hung, Drawn and Quartered. I looked at the menu this morning, Scott, and it looked very inviting, including Marmite-flavoured potato wedges.
Now, there's a thing. But it's certainly in the right location, being adjacent to the Tower of London, where it's believed over 100 unfortunates are believed to have been executed. Anyway, is there anything else you'd like to add about the death penalty per se?
Well, in the early 19th century, the death penalty was removed for a number of crimes: pickpocketing, forgery and rape. And by 1861, capital crimes were reduced to murder, treason, espionage, here's one, arson in a royal dockyard, and piracy, brackets with violence.
Now, I think you also mentioned a little while ago about pickpocketing subject to death penalty. Well, that seems a bit over the top.
Well, indeed, as lots of the punishments were, the death penalty actually dates to pre-Christian times, with a range of crimes resulting in the ultimate sentence, with many different methods of execution. However, by the 11th century, William the Conqueror banned all executions except in time of war. Things were to change over the centuries, as during the reign of Henry VIII, 1491 to 1547, it is estimated that in the region of 72,000 people were executed. And bear in mind, the population of England in 1500 was only 2.6 million. Methods of execution depended on the class system. The upper class would be beheaded. Others not so lucky, as I've said, could be expected to be hung, drawn and quartered, or even burned alive. In modern times, the death penalty for murder was suspended for 5 years from 1965 and made permanent in 1969, but it was not until 1998 that the death penalty in Britain was finally abolished for all crimes.
Well, thank goodness for that. I'm so thankful you don't have burnings and all the other things as well. Anyway, I'm sure you've got something to tell us about the Rayleigh prison and the gallows, and perhaps some more macabre exhibits either at or perhaps coming to the museum in the future.
Okay, well, indeed, there was a prison in Rayleigh, and full details can be found in the Rayleigh Town Museum. It was normal on the outskirts of town on the main road to have a prison. Now, that told visiting people coming through town, behave or else fine prison. But that was better than on the opposite side of the road coming into Rayleigh. Now, by the way, for people who know Rayleigh, it's the site of a public house called the Traveller's Joy. And that's where the gallows used to be in Rayleigh. And when I talk to people in the museum about prisons and gallows, I ask them where they think the prison was in Romford. And of course, they immediately think about it and say, ah, Gallows Corner in Rochford, in Romford, because that's where the prison was. Now, on a lighter note, perhaps, if we can finish up on this, Scott, there was a lock-up pillory and stocks in Rayleigh,
yeah.
Right in the centre of the High Street outside Holy Trinity Town. And a few years ago, when we were looking to reintroduce the Trinity Fair into Rayleigh, I wanted, as an exhibit for the public, to have the lock-up pillory and stocks reintroduced. And I was going to get wet sponges and put people in the stocks to throw at them to raise money for the museum and for charity. I persuaded two eminent Rayleigh people to come into the stocks. That was the headmaster of the primary school, Rayleigh Primary School, and, very popular, I can't understand why, a Member of Parliament, Mark Francois. Now, they both offered and volunteered to have these wet sponges thrown at them, but unfortunately, I wasn't able to do so because of those wonderful words, health and safety. The wet sponges may have affected other members of the public and it was deemed to be too much of a risk. But one day,
you're hoping to do that maybe during the course of the coming year. Who
absolutely,
knows?
Absolutely.
Well, particularly to celebrate all the things that are going on. That would be good stuff.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you very much indeed once again for coming in and telling us all about that.